the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're talking T20 World Cup, Thailand women's cricket, the return of the Sheffield Shield, Australia and South Africa, England and South Africa, Nepal's first ODI against the United States, and the Dame Shah's birth certificate. Annabel Sutherland joins us on the phone to tell us how the women's team will never lose again. And Belinda Clark joins us live at CA headquarters for hashtag AskTGC to dissect your dreams, dad stuff, and other weird things that are found in our DMs. This is all brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com or budgiesmuggler.com.au. Huh. Ian Higgins here, joined by Sam Perry, who faces me directly live in Melbourne right now. Pez, you know, first question to you. You know, it's this funny time of year where, like, well, international cricket in the men's sphere anyway is over for the most part. Well, in Australia it is anyway. You know, club cricket, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's still going on. You know, what do you do at this stage of the season when there's nothing left to play for?
Thanks for the wonderful welcome here,
you
guys.
You are welcome. Welcome.
You look great this week.
And I feel good.
You sound great.
Thanks,
and this is all relative to last week.
Okay.
And I include myself in that as well.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, yes.
Great to have a guest on this week. Great to have two guests on this week. Just generally a better proposition this week than last week. But thank you for those who did tune in to the post-CA Awards hangover show.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you do this stage of the season?
Yeah, what do you do?
You get to training late. You go through the motions. Mm-hmm. In Sydney especially, there's lots of rain in February.
Heaps.
So the wickets are shit.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's shit. You're worse at everything than you've always been. You start dreaming of next season, 800 runs, 30 wickets, that sort of thing. I'm not going to commit the requisite amount of improvement to my training program to actually achieve that, but I'll still dream about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'll dream of myself with an enormous or excellent rig, whether it's trim, whether it's enormous, whatever, flicks your switch. I'll look good in a training singlet. You might think more short-term about the end of season trip.
Yes.
He goes. So I'm just listing a couple of things that you know, a couple of ways, I guess, that you crawl to the end of season. It's like going to lunch with in-laws or something where you pretty much tap out of the conversation mentally about two-thirds of the way through, just somehow thinking, I will get there. I will get to the end of this thing. I actually quite love my in-laws. It's just a, you know.
Mate, February I found is like the most selfish time of year for cricket because like, you know, let's say in the premier competition in, well, Sydney, just where I played or we both played, there's like 20 teams, right? And six of those make the finals. So 14 teams in every grade don't make finals. So most people, is my point, don't make finals.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much selfish cricket happening where like there's nothing to play for. You know you're not going to make finals. You know your team's not good enough to win three games in a row to finish sixth to then play the top team who haven't lost a game all season,
right,
who have a quotient of like, you know, 1.8. And so all you're hoping is for like, well, this is the most selfish batting you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
Fucking oath we're batting on after tea.
Yes.
Fucking oath we are.
Yeah.
You guys are going to watch me score 70 painful cricket runs in fourth grade.
So what you're saying is like the morality is debased even further than it normally is in grade cricket because people are tired. There's less to play for in terms of the competition table. So Lord of the Flies takes over.
Exactly.
It really becomes even more of a selfish pursuit than it already was.
And then there's like footies just going on in the background as well. So like blokes are just like, no, I'm going to training now for training as well generally, especially the Tuesday training.
Yeah.
Like, you know, usually great cricket Tuesday, Thursday trainings. Tuesday is a really weak turnout.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then like one grade is going to make finals. And let's say it's third grade, for instance. And like, so that like there's like 11 people at training.
And there's a major disparity between the one side in your club that's making finals who are doing like a centre wicket practice or whatever.
Yeah,
they've got wonderful energy about their group. And everybody else is just crawling, sometimes literally to the nets and otherwise.
It's like this is also a great time of year for WhatsApp groups where like where you think you're good, you got a bit of confidence about you.
Well, because you're saying if you're
in the finals
right? Yeah.
If you're up for the finals, this is a great time, time to be part of that WhatsApp group. Although there's always a couple of people in there who are going to get left out of WhatsApp groups because they're about to be dropped for guys coming back from say second grade into the third grade side, you know, stacking your team for finals. It's quite a time of year for club cricketers all around.
Hence your question.
Hence,
it's a specific. And let's not confuse. I mean, let's get into the granularity of this. Let's not confuse it with immediately post Christmas period, which is your dreams are still alive a
they're
little
slightly
bit.
Still alive,
you're slightly still alive. I'm going to come back after Christmas. I'm going to fix up what I ruined for the first half of the season. And then a few weeks go by, maybe you get called off on a Saturday, Sunday or whatever because, you know, the rain actually comes in to the Eastern Seaboard around that time. You bat once in a month. Your season's fucking over. It's killed your dream. Yeah. And now you're an absolute, you're a drain on the club mentally, physically, and spiritually.
And your friends and family. Footy, though.
Footy's looking good. G Collin will look good.
Mate, let's get first thing on the agenda here. The T20 World Cup starts on February 21, which is Friday. In 4 days' time on Friday.
Yeah.
Starts at Spotless Stadium over there in Sydney, Western Sydney, Australia versus India. Are you excited for the Women's World Cup?
Yeah.
Are you excited for it?
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Well, it's a chance for gold, basically.
It's a chance
for montages. It's a chance for like gold-clad Australian representatives holding up trophies that are glistening and streamers and me living off their reflected glory. And that's going to be a bit of a theme of our conversation. I'm very, very interested in this tournament because I think, you know, the women's team and like to their absolute credit and CA's credit, like have actually achieved this level of scrutiny now where there's like a genuine pressure on them to win. There's a need. Like in the past, I would suggest just very generally and without even consideration, and I probably should have considered these words, but in the past, it's kind of like, oh, that's nice. If they do well there, that's really good. Gee, the girls are doing well. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, mate, there better be some fucking gold at the end of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We better be adding to the trophy cap. That won four out of the last five. A lot of investment into the side. Mm-hmm. Didn't win the last ODI World Cup over there in India. Gee, Healy's not scoring runs. What are we looking at? And I like it. It's a compliment.
Pressure.
It's a compliment.
Well, you're right. It would be exactly the same if it was for the men's team. They need to win this. But like even more so. But this also could be like a really nadir moment in women's sport in Australia as well. I think because I can't think of like a bigger possible tournament win. I mean, it's already in my head. MCG, 90,000 people, India or England in the final, preferably, I suppose, and it being enormous, Australia win by 10 wickets. That could be awesome. It could be amazing and a huge moment for women's sport.
At a high watermark level for women.
But also, why do they don't even make the final? That's a thing that can happen in sport.
As we said last week, and it's a compliment to them, but effigies.
I forget a lot of things that happened last week, but I didn't forget that we said that.
Yeah.
So, Pez, I'll break it down for the listeners at home who might
be
unaware of how the competition works. There's 10 teams in the tournament. There's two groups of five, and obviously the top two in each group make the semifinals. You know how the rest works. One of the most exciting things that's seen on the socials this week was that Thailand are debuting in the World Cup this year, and they're like modus operandi or their objective of the World Cup is to have fun. And I'm like, I don't trust that. What's your angle? What are you guys playing at?
Yeah, look at us, like, you know, sitting here smugly laughing at the idea of having fun. Yeah. You know, playing cricket. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fun of cricket, wouldn't have thought so.
You're that new, are you? Yeah. It's like Back to the Future 3 when, like, you know, Marty and Doc are like, you know, oh, we run for fun. And the guy's like, run for fun? What the hell kind of fun is that? Fuck. I think I've done impressions on here before. Never again.
And obviously you were doing the Thai captain there just then.
I was not doing it.
I suppose like one of the most interesting things about the sport at the moment is there's a huge gap between like the top four. There's a huge gap between the top four being India, New Zealand, New Zealand, England and Australia, top four countries. And the rest, as we saw when Sri Lanka came out here at the beginning of the Australian summer, when we absolutely smashed Sri Lanka, the rest is quite weak.
I think we're all going to learn about the structure and vagaries of women's cricket as this tournament plays out.
I'm still figuring it out. I'll be honest to say, like as someone who operates in a lot of conversations around cricket, mostly trying to make people laugh, but like I don't know a lot about women's cricket and I'm looking forward to engaging in this because Australia's going to fucking win the thing.
Well, exactly.
We're going
to
win it.
There's no better way to engage Australians than to say you can live off the reflected glory.
Yes.
So I think there's heaps we're going to learn through it. I think that this all sounds very messagey from us, but it is true. A lot has gone into this. They've put a massive investment into this, and I think they want a huge bang for buck, CA, out of this. They want clubs to sign up. They want clubs to sell tickets. They want a ton of people to go to the games. They're calling it possibly the largest sporting event ever hosted in Australia, women's sporting event ever hosted in Australia.
Women's sport in the world. If 90,000 people
in
turn
the final.
In the final,
largest event, women's sports event ever in Australia in terms of a whole event.
Yes.
And then the largest ever attended match for women's sport in the world.
What's number one? Would that be Women's World Cup football?
Probably, yeah.
FIFA? Yeah. US?
Yeah.
US, I'd say. Yeah, it's probably that. Yeah, when you, I mean, you're right, you talk about the investment put in. Other countries have done a similar investment. So Australia have been, for the longest period of time, Australia have been fully professional, have had the most professional players. Other countries now following suit, specifically England, which might interest our UK listeners back home. After Australia won the Ashes last year, 12-4, they decimated them. Yeah, a normal score in the Ashes.
I honestly reckon the way they format the Ashes for women's, like for the women's Ashes, is probably how they'll do it for the men.
It might be the future. Yeah,
it is. Just like ODIs, T20s. And test matches combined.
They'll
and
play, they'll play 15 T20s in a month.
Something like that, yeah. And you have an end score of 12-4, which is like a low-scoring rugby league match. But anyway.
Yeah. So after that, the ECB pumped £20 million into women's cricket. And I was talking before about the big separation between top four and the rest. Sri Lanka, I learnt during the week, have lost 16. They've won one of the last 16 T20s. And they're probably like, well, for instance, Thailand are worse than them. So there's a huge gap. Anyway, in terms of investment put in, CA, you rightfully say, and they want people to, it's probably a good chance to plug what CA are talking about as well.
Yeah, well, we're going to catch up with Belinda Clark and talk about the club ticketing programs. Yeah. You're going to hear a little bit about it there, but basically they've got this, seems to be like a too good to be true program where basically if you're a cricket club, you register for this program, look out for it on the internet. I don't actually have it in front of me, so that's wonderful media work. But if you register for this program and you're a club and you sell like one adult ticket to the Women's World Cup, you get $5 for it. So if you sell 1,000 adult tickets, you get, what, $5,000.
Yeah.
It's $1 back for kids' tickets. So pretty good.
Pretty good. Let's get on to what's happening in the men's cricket. And I suppose, where should we start? I'll start with the return of the Sheffield Shield, I suppose. Let's start with the return of the Sheffield Shield. They're using the Duke's ball. I didn't realise they were doing that again this year. They trialled that last year after Christmas, after the Big Bash, when the Shield comes back, they use the Duke ball. And this is a real fun time of year where, like, we can't play the Duke ball anywhere. It could be in fucking India and it still swings around corners.
Mm.
And we're just like, nah, I don't like it.
Mm.
But it's fun.
Yeah, I thought they might have got rid of it once we retained the Ashes, but obviously that's not got linguistic and like enough power linguistically. Mm. So it's only until we win the Ashes
didn't win
we win that. So yeah, didn't win them.
Mm.
Threw it away, as a big puppy said.
Mm.
But yeah, it's good though. Duke's ball's a good ball. You know, it's great to see the ball. It's great to see the ball coming to the contest.
Bring the fucking Duke here. Bring it here. Colin de Grandhomme would have taken 40 wickets in this series here if he was using the Duke.
And that's what we want.
That's what I want.
Mm.
Yeah.
CDG.
That's what I want.
Well, he stood in between, Steve Smith and Alan bought a medal, basically.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Collins cost
him. He cost him. There's one vote in the end.
One vote.
Yeah. CDG just had it over Smith, so imagine what he could do with the Dukes.
Well, I saw Trent Copeland actually buying to Travis Dean in that New South Wales Victoria game.
Hell of a sentence.
And Cope's friend of the show and close personal friend, Trent Copeland, hit Travis Dean in the box, and then Travis had to retire hurt. I've actually never seen that before. I've never seen a batsman retire hurt from being hit in the box. You ever seen that before?
No, I've never, because obviously, you go through the ritual of getting hit in the dick. Everyone knows that it's terrible if you have one.
And I never found it funny.
Okay. Always, you must have wonderful empathy.
I've got heaps of flaws. Heaps of flaws.
But wonderful empathy, though. You obviously feel for people.
I'm glad you finished that sentence for me.
Yeah. It's the way a man collapses. It's the
buckling of the knees.
The buckling of the knees, and then the widening of the knees with the bat in the middle, and just the general the light riding up and down just to sort it out.
When Liam Livingstone got hit in the Big Bash and he cried out, "Oh no!"
Yeah.
That was funny, but that was a reaction of him saying that.
Yeah,
his awareness that it had happened like three times in a row, or whatever. That was funny to me.
And that's the thing. There's a big difference between laughing at it and then if someone says, well, actually his testicle exploded and he's no longer able to have children. All of a sudden, now you're laughing at that. No, I'm going the other way. That happened.
You've done me there.
All right. Well, you're sick.
I told you, man. Heaps of flaws. Heaps of flaws.
Anyway, I've never seen guy hit in those regions and actually go the whole hog and
I can't. Sorry, boys. Can't carry on. I remember once
he came back and scored 70 odd.
Well, he's a good little player. There it is, first one. I saw, we probably talked about this last week again, I can't really remember, but Craig McDermott, my first ever hero.
Yeah.
I remember him buying a ball, I think it was to Brian Lara, and okay. he broke his box.
Right.
His box broke into two pieces. But even then, Brian just carried on. But I've never, like, I don't know. So, I what does it take? Is it a certain spot?
Well, they must. Spot? I mean, we'll have to ask Travis directly why he left, because, like, I mean, from my personal experience, and I presume it's the same for most people, like, you know, it's very painful to be struck there, but very rarely does it result in a like debilitating injury where you can't go on. It's just severe pain.
Travis was
but
debilitated.
There must have been I can only guess, like maybe the seam has cut him.
Okay,
you know, on you know wherever you know in the general region or something to make him think I actually need to get this checked out. So it was a fierce blow. I guess it's a long way of saying it. He's come back and he's hit 70 odd.
I played with a guy who wore two boxes. He used to have in the batting. He wore two boxes.
How does that work? It wasn't so it's because, like a babushka doll of boxes. My first thought is, how does that work?
I guess he's wearing a youth box into a men's box.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
And thus conceding that a youth box.
I never asked.
Fixer.
I never. Mate, can you just show us? Like mid over?
Oh, it's actually an extra large and then a double extra large box.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But yeah, he used to do that. I don't know. But it wasn't because he had like a massive dick. It wasn't because of that. I don't know why he did that.
Putting two on, eh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Flexing. It's a weird flex, but he did it. Mate, other stuff in Shield cricket. Mate, what's going on in Shield cricket? I just think like it's really funny, this Shield cricket, because there's such little amount of test match cricket this year in Australia. There's one test match against Afghanistan before the four test India series next summer. And then there's two tests away in Afghanistan. That's all there is in test cricket this year, which is a very limited amount of test cricket for a country like Australia.
Shield cricket, so, the real loser out of like the crowded schedule at the moment, because there was a bit of hype on Shield cricket this time last year because it was jostling for Ashes positions.
Australia didn't have
any long form success over there. But now it's just like, okay, we retain the Ashes, we've used the Duke's ball, we've just had an exhausting BBL series, we've won all the tests, there's no imminent test matches to jostle for positions for. You know, you could hit 400s in a row like it looks like Nick Maddison might.
Yeah.
But if Glenn Maxwell comes back and hits a scintillating T20-100, well, get him in for Bangladesh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know he's out to relax. So, yeah, I think there's probably couldn't be less interest in Shield cricket at the moment.
Because everyone's safe, aren't they? Like, I'm even thinking like Travis Head.
Yeah.
Like,
safe.
He's just in.
Wade.
Yeah,
safe.
Probably. How many runs is it's one of those? Madison's had a he's averaging over 185 something like that. He's
well,
having
so
a great
this match
season.
Against, as we go to air, there's a couple of hours left. Day four against New South Wales with Victoria. Victoria look very well positioned to win. Nick Maddison hit 95 and then 105.
Yeah,
Not out.
Yeah.
And did you see his celebration for his ton?
Yeah, he went on to both knees.
Both knees. So again, continuing what we've predicted, which is that 100 celebrations just starting to get a bit weird.
Yeah.
In a great way, in a rare way, but he just sort of slowly. Speaking of like just getting. Collapsing onto the knees, hit his tongue, claps onto his knees, and put his bat in the air, and I liked it.
He's an interesting character, like a case study, Nick Maddison. He's an interesting cat, Nick Maddison, because he's almost a forgotten baggy green owner. A little bit, don't you reckon? He had that one test match. No, he had a couple test matches.
Well, he was actually primed this summer. He was making his way back because of his just like almost unparalleled Shield form, and then ended up taking a break.
Yeah.
So, good. All power to him. All power to the bloke.
Well, mate, that's actually a good segue into Matt Renshaw also taking a break.
Yes.
From cricket for mental health reasons. Now, I find this really interesting because how many guys now? Is it what, six of guys who are really like primed? Matt Renshaw is probably not particularly close at the moment. He's sort of since he's been back into the Shield setup after being dropped from Australia.
But once you get into that test side as a young person, like you don't need as many scores to be back in the conversation again. So he's not close because he hasn't scored a lot of runs, but it'll only take him being back in form, I think, for people to talk about him again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the opener spot is still there, isn't it? It's still there a little bit.
Yeah.
It's these guys who are like right on the precipice who have played heaps of cricket from a young age. Obviously, I'm thinking Nick Maddison, obviously Will Pekowski, Matt Renshaw now, Glenn Maxwell, not in the same young category, but played heaps and heaps of cricket.
Endless.
And they're all getting to the point where it's like, I need to take a break from this.
Yeah.
I think we've spoken about this in the past. Like this is like where a large part of our humour comes from, obviously. But like the way that like cricket affects you mentally is maybe a little bit funny when it's like in a club sense, but when it's in a professional, your life revolves around this. It must be so intense. And a guy who's like played cricket, like test match cricket, like Matt Ramshaw did when he was 19, 20, scoring test match hundreds of the SCG, straight in the first slip. It must be like, I'm not surprised that heaps of guys are taking a break, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And like, players wouldn't do it unless they felt like they needed to. So again, all power to Renshaw for wanting to do it. If you're triggered by that or think that that kind of reflects some kind of weakness or injury weakness on his part, then you need to read a book or understand. I mean, nobody would willingly disadvantage themselves in terms of like success in their professional career. If Renshaw needs a break, good luck to him. I hope he has a break. I hope he comes back and returns to the form that we know he has. He's a special player. He's got a great career ahead of him, and I hope he can manage himself mentally to do so. Well done, Matt.
Well said, mate. Mate, don't you think it's funny? It's just interesting as well. Like all the, you know, the Ask TDCs we get, like the dreams, you see it around like every part of your life. It just, cricket revolves around you. Once you immerse yourself in the game as deeply as what we do, what all our listeners do out there, it's like, it's so, like, no other sport does that. No other sport. Do you see cricket in every sphere of, like, walk past like a nice green, you know, bit of grass in a park and you go, I wonder how the outfit looks like today. You pick up, you have got a piece of paper, you roll it up, and you start shadow batting. There was a tweet going around the other day about, you know, why do men shadow bowl?
Yeah,
you know?
I saw that, yeah.
I got a mate I went to a bar with the other day and he's like, just ran down the street and bowled a ball.
Yeah.
Didn't have a ball, just shadow bowled. Bowling.
Yeah, right.
Of his full run.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're saying cricket more than any other sport. Mate, is everywhere you see it. It's like I see dead people, but instead I just see runs off my hip.
Exactly. What about all the memes where like people shadow bowl, then turn around and appeal to a statue who's got his finger up?
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. That's why people dream about it.
Getting a bit tired, that one. I would have thought a bit tired. I mean, unlike us.
Yeah. Cool. Now that we've already used that in our Channel 7 show and the show's, you know, over for the season. Mm. Actually, Moses Henriques posted something quite interesting as well in terms of mental health stuff. He sort of posted a message saying that, you know, Instagram in particular paints like a lot of happy images, and Moses obviously just won the Big Bash. He's had a wonderful season. He'd be right in contention for Australia. Yeah,
they're looking at him very closely for Bangladesh.
He's captain of the Australia A squad. Mm. He'd be very close to being in the T20 World Cup squad, I'd imagine, as well.
Actually, Moses's like chances for this test squad is like a hark back to those scenarios where there's like sounds coming out of CA around Moses. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, he's obviously scored a lot of hundreds and stuff like that, but like there's noises, you know, like the signal's gone out from CA towers somewhere.
It's like when there's like a new pope and then like the smoke comes out, but it's Moses smoke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's quite old school. It just seems like there's noises around Moses maybe making it back, you know, Hones is calling people, backgrounding people, who knows? Mm. I'm all for it because he's a wonderful bloke. And yeah, he was saying, on his Instagram, he's like, he just was going through his profile saying, I'm just seeing myself smiling here everywhere, but was just being really clear that they've just had a baby and they've spent as much time crying as their baby. And, you know, I can definitely identify with that as well. It's a very private sphere, having a kid. You're meant to, you know, there's still societal pressure to like look as though everything's great and it's all thrilling and a wonderful change to your life, but it's fucking trenches a lot of the time. So, again, more power. We're just giving power to everybody today, but more power to him for calling that out as someone, you know, for whom, yes, there is Pope smoke coming out for his
mate, I think it's good. It sort of goes into the question of the very top of the show, just like, what is this time of year? It's a slog, and like often cricket as his life is a slog. Mm. Anyway, mate, getting onto the men's team, they've just flown out to South Africa where obviously it all went down a couple of years ago. They've got three T20s and three ODIs over there. Glenn Maxwell, as you said before, is out with an elbow injury, and Darcy Short is into the squad to replace Maxwell for both of those games. Pez, on the way over here, we saw that Darcy Short had quite a day out in a club game on the weekend.
I saw this,
and that's obviously how I got selected.
Well, yeah, without doubt. It just goes to show, if you play well at grade cricket, you can
never
go
far
all
away.
Yeah,
never
no, it was like away. I saw it was 101 off 85 balls and 8 for 34. You actually don't want your international players to do that well.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I think he's like, oh, great cricket struggling, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's a good little bowler.
Well, it's like when you see Shane Watson obviously doing really well for Sutherland, opening the batting, still scoring hundreds, and you're just like, oh, we're all quite far away. We're actually all quite far away.
If speaking of smoke signals, if someone can tell us what we've got to do
with Watto.
Oh, we love you. No, we're sticking with you, Watto. We will meet one day on this podcast, which we love you very much. Mm. There's a lot of great things to talk about.
The way he batted in that bushfire game, I mean, fuck. I mean,
well, I'll tell you how we batted. No, you tell me.
How he batted?
Yeah.
Like a bloke who plays first grade.
Right. I was going to say he batted like a bloke who was the cricketer in the backyard and decided right. instead of trying to look as though I'm friends with everybody or going to be conciliatory or whatever, no, I'm just going to smash everything.
He wants one more IPL contract. I don't blame him. No,
he's just gone over to the PSL, hasn't he, or something? There's another picture in another league.
Yeah, okay. I think that was Hawkesbury.
He's still probably in Australia's best T20 side.
Mate, honestly, in terms of like most underrated players, and like if you ever write this on the internet, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like Watson is one of Australia's greatest ever ODI players.
Save it. Save it for when he comes on the cast.
Well, mate, fuck if we ever get him. Right, mate, I don't know what we've done. We're more likely to get Bradman, honestly, at this point. Have you put in a request for him, though? Have you asked?
I have, yeah. Can we exhume him?
Who are we going to get first, Bairstow or Watson?
Danny, brother.
Love you, brother.
This whole show is now just talking to media managers who definitely don't know or care about this show.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not get too self-referential.
Okay, mate. What about Nepal playing their first ever ODI match last week, actually a couple of weeks ago, in Kathmandu, which I was understood to be just a clothing company.
Dear. You shouldn't say that on air.
No, I'm joking. It's like Patagonia. It's just a clothing company. 20,000 people North turned face. Up.
I didn't realise it was a face.
20,000 people turned up and they're in a tri-series at the moment between the USA and Oman. Oman won that match, the very first match that Nepal played in Kathmandu by 18 runs. Mate, I reckon this stuff is awesome. And I desperately want these nations now. They need to get the Indian money. I'm in now. Because I was watching that game at Kathmandu and I was like, fucking oath, how cool would it be? Like, that's when you start get, like, travelling fans, away fans. Mate, imagine how good it'd be to go to Chicago for an away game. You know, Kathmandu, yes, I'm doing that. I'm doing that for an away trip. Because at the moment it's kind of like, Ashes, that's awesome. You should do that. That's bucket list stuff. That's really cool. You should do that stuff. The rest.
Look at you. Look at you growing the international game. Look at you on message there. That's nice. That's good.
But I don't want them to get CA money. I want them to get the Indian money.
Yeah, even more. Yeah, mate. I'm all for this as well. Like, we'll talk about the Oman Nepal match. I mean, firstly, we know one player, and that's Sandeep Lamashani, none for 27 off 10. So they just saw him off. He's got the runs easily in the second innings. But, mate, I've always thought about that. Like, what if, have we said this before? Like, what if the US, like, what if USA played cricket the way they play basketball, and it was as popular? I'm not saying it's going to happen. Yeah. Or China, and all of a sudden, like, World Cup final is China versus USA. How are both of those countries playing cricket? Now, let's not get into national stereotypes of how they would play, but I would just like to see all of the skills of cricket, but, like, you know, doubled. You know, could the USA, I think I've said this before, like, produce a bowler that could bowl 180? You know what I mean? Like, possibly. That would be amazing. I mean, I've always thought that in terms of like four square handball, to be honest, with the Olympics, USA v China, and just the politics.
Yeah.
But that's a separate issue.
Yeah, I'd suspect that China would produce a lot of technical players.
Well, see, I just think we're getting into dangerous stereotypes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think Germany would play? No.
Strong leadership.
Come on.
Like, mate, what about Nassim Shah taking a hat-trick? Now, I know this happened a couple of weeks ago. He took a hat-trick against Bangladesh in Pakistan. They were playing that game in Rawalpindi. And my note here is, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Everything about that's good. They're playing cricket again in Pakistan. Nassim Shah is the youngest ever player to get a test hat-trick. He's just blown away Bangladesh. It's fucking good.
I want Australia to go to Rawalpindi and play and, like, for us to receive grainy footage. I mean, this is all about things being the 90s again.
Yeah.
I want to receive grainy footage. I want there to be thousands and thousands of people there.
Yeah.
Nassim Shah to be steaming in and going, you're on our patch now, son. Mate, and whether or not you think I'm 16, I'm steaming through you.
Mate, this is the problem with, like, the big three owning cricket.
Yeah.
England, India. It's fucking going to be so boring. Whereas, like, you talk about the 90s.
Is.
Amazing West Indies cricket.
Yeah.
Australia have that incredible series in the West Indies where, like, they win for the first time in however many years. Pakistan, great place to go. Like, all these, like, amazing tours and stuff. And now it's like, you play two big series, we're going to play each other every other year. Mm. And it's like, nah, this is why Nepal needs to get the Indian money because that's, like, no, it's something different. New stimulus. I can't have the same two countries play, like, a fucking World Series like it's the baseball.
Mm.
It's not good for cricket. It's not good for the game.
Oh, mate, this is the most progressive cast of all time. And I'm here for it.
Budgie smuggler. God. Hey, mate, what about so Australia obviously going over. I sort of skipped past that. Australia obviously going there to play against South Africa. But England have just actually, they won their T20 series this morning, 2-1. The second game, Moeen Ali, who I forgot played cricket internationally for England. He did some wonderful things by winning the game in that second game. And then Owen Morgan got them over the line this morning in that third game. So I'm actually not sure where South Africa are at with their T20 and ODI setups. Their test team's been fucking decimated, but I feel like they'll still be okay. But is it going to be a thing where, like, we won't respect England's 2-1 victory away from home in the lead-up in a World Cup year until Australia lose there, and then you'd be like, oh, no, South Africa are quite good.
Correct. That's probably exactly what will happen. Mate, you know, at the risk of joining the, like, hipster throng, there's a couple of highlights rolling around of Moeen Ali that are just indisputably sexual.
As in the last couple of days?
Yeah. And one shot in particular over point where the bat shapes are just out of control and just so, like, it is the epitome of nonchalance. Mm. Combined with the beard, there's a Michael Bevan quality, but, like, in the T20 era to the bat shape. I'm not saying there's a Michael Bevan quality to his finishing because that would be insulting to Bevan, so they should be clear about that. Mm-hmm. But, Moeen Ali, wouldn't you love to see him in the Big Bash? What a player. What an enigma. I mean, he's too good. Yeah. He's too good for the Big Bash, like probably most of those players.
Probably.
But, man, what a player. Yeah.
The reaction to that shot, particularly that you're talking about from Ben Stokes, was about at the other end. He, like, the ball was like halfway in the air and, like, put his right hand to the back of his head. Like, what the fuck have I just seen? Incredible.
I think England has a good T20 side. Mate, I think they've got a really good T20 side.
Tell you what the hardest thing was for me this Valentine's Day.
No? Yeah, I mean, yes, sorry.
Because there was a thing of just like, don't forget the singles out there or whatever. And they showed the greatest single of all, and that was Jack Leach's single, which took the scores level at where was that game? Headingley. Mm. Headingley game, the Ben Stokes game. Right. And it was just all over fucking Twitter again.
Yeah.
To deal with that.
Oh, man. Well, you know, they're great at the banter. English boys.
Anything else, Pez?
No, not really, mate. Looking forward to chatting with Annabelle Sutherland next, young Tearaway.
Yeah.
Young superstar.
Should we set it up? What do we know about Annabelle Sutherland?
Well, we'll see on the show. But she's a superstar in the making.
Yeah.
And, pretty promising start to the international career. She's been selected in the T20 squad. Some say, you know, before her time. But, you know, one of those, she's pretty confident from all reports. She'll be the second Sutherland on this show.
Yeah, good point.
So,
and I saw Matthew Mott talking about Annabelle Sutherland, saying, like, it's a bit of a bolt. Not bolt from the blue necessarily, but it's a bit of a, it's a selection for the future, but also, like, they're backing her a bit. Mm. So it's interesting, 18 years old.
We'll have to ask her whether, it, you know, she feels like a Theo Walcott selection. From,
I like it.
Yeah, 2006.
Sven, and Matthew Mott's Sven Goran Eriksson.
Yeah, that's right. And that would make, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Who's Gascoigne? The previous World Cup.
That's also coming up. And then Belinda Clark is joining us live in CA headquarters, as I mentioned earlier, to get us through hashtag AskTGC and also talk about the Women's World Cup. So all of that's still to come on this very February show.
He goes, it's time for Budgie Smuggler. I believe there's actually been some social activity around our latest offer.
Yeah.
It's a gift. No one has to get it. But
no.
There are some smugglers with the all-time great Australian rigs.
People are getting it, man, and it's so enchanting to the eyes. This is a wonderful bit of patchwork, the great Australian alpha. Sorry, the
great Australian rig.
Great Australian rig, sorry.
I was a bit confused with the all-time alpha,
yes,
our
which
first
I keep
offering.
Doing to my head. Yeah, they're completely separate entities.
Major distinction.
Anyway, so someone got us on Instagram stories and was just they posted a photo of, I presume, this girl's boyfriend posing in their living room wearing only the great cricketer smugglers. Available from budgiesmuggle.com.au. And it was just him. He might have been wearing socks, but he was posing in the patchwork. And I was just like, "That it looks incredible." And I presume it was a Valentine's Day gift. It was all revolving around Valentine's Day. So I was like, what a great gift to give to a partner.
He's wonderful. I don't know how I'd feel if my wife presented me with, I mean, this is me just talking down our own product, but presented me with
Jordan Silk's neck.
Yeah. Or just saying, hey, listen, you should wear this. As budgies, all these pictures of other men. But anyway, each to their own. And, you know, if you do want to wear budgies of the great Australian rigs, which
it's a celebration, mate. It's a celebration.
Sean Tate's calves.
Yes.
Adam Dale's hips.
Yes. Andrew Simon's chest.
Marcus North's kind eyes.
That's such a good one. He's such a nice guy as well.
Nathan Bracken's hair.
Yes. Adam Finch's dimples.
Aaron Finch is his name.
What did I say?
Adam Finch.
That's his brother.
Ah, of course. Who we met at the Cricket Australia.
That's right, yeah. Don't even know if he has a brother.
Don't think he does.
Sorry, Adam. Or Aaron.
Oh, you've outfitted him.
I got him there.
Budgiesmuggler.com.au.
He goes, on the phone, we have, an upcoming superstar. She'll no doubt appreciate that level of pressure that I've heaped on her, but it wouldn't be a surprise either. It's a level of pressure that I think the entire women's team will feel over the next few weeks as they try and help Australia regain its self-esteem by winning more trophies.
And identity.
Don't interrupt my intro. That's never happened before. I'm talking, of course, about Annabelle Sutherland. Annabelle, welcome to The Grad Cricketer.
Thank you very much for having me.
There are some lovely manners as well. Far better manners than Steve Waugh, I should say, who was just mainly talking out the side of his mouth. But anyway, we're talking about Steve Waugh off air. Yeah. Let me get this straight, Annabelle. So you've debuted for Australia pretty young. You've been playing for the Stars before that, Victoria, Prahran. You debuted for the Renegades at 15. So when did you debut in first grade? So 11, 12? What are we looking at?
Yeah, probably about primary school, I reckon. maybe 12 or 13, I reckon.
No, even still. Yeah. Even still, that's amazing.
You had to work pretty hard, go through fours and threes first. So what were you there, nine?
was straight into the first, which was nice.
You've obviously you got quite a that's been well documented that, you know, obviously James Sutherland, former CEO of Cricket Australia, is your father. Will plays first class cricket for Victoria as well. So I mean, cricket must have been everywhere in your family growing up. And you know, I wonder, like, you know, when you came home from school one day, did Dad sort of say, "No, I want you to be a lawyer"? I saw you said, "No, Dad, I want to be a lawyer." But then your dad was like, "No, you will bat and bowl for Australia and bring glory to this nation."
Not as such. I think we played a lot of sport growing up. We've got two brothers, so we spent a fair bit of time in the backyard, not focusing on school as much. So I'm not sure whose influence that was, but I certainly prefer to be out in the backyard than doing homework.
Can you tell us the backyard dynamics? Obviously, Will, your older brother, and Tom, it's Tom, isn't it, your younger brother?
Yeah.
Who's batting, who's bowling? What are sort of the backyard dynamics going on?
And maybe if Dad gets involved.
Yeah, Dad involved, yeah.
Just run us through that.
Usually Dad stays out of it, to be honest. We get pretty heated in the backyard, and usually it's Will batting, and Tom and I left to slave away and basically give throwdowns for hours on end. But we try and get in there, and that usually ends in a little bit of tears. But it's all good fun, and yeah, we love it. So yeah, we enjoy it.
Do you ever have any, like, majorly dominant performances over your brother in the backyard? And, like, possibly could you describe that? I mean, maybe for the – you don't want to give away too many secrets about your brother, who's got a growing career as well, but, like, what are his weaknesses in the backyard? Or just
short ball?
Yeah, what are we looking at? Just sort of keep him on the back foot or what? Back stool?
I mean, if you can get the black electric tape out on the tennis ball and start hooping some in-swingers in, that's probably my only go-to. But sometimes I do force him to bat left-handed when I actually can't get him out. So,
that's my mind games.
Yeah, it is, yes.
So some real power dynamics going there. Obviously, you were, as Sam said in the intro, you were one of the youngest ever players, if not the youngest player, to play in the Big Bash, 15 for the Renegades. Obviously now playing for the Stars as well. I mean, how big of a distraction is sort of cricket or other parts of your life? I mean, you're sort of, you know, debuting for Australia at 18. You've got your whole life ahead of you, Annabelle. But, like, you know, you could be playing for Australia for 10, 15, God, 20 years, right, really. Like, I mean, how important are other aspects of your life, or is it sort of all just focused on cricket?
I finished Year 12 last year, so that was sort of more of a focus for me than cricket, as much as I would have preferred to be playing more cricket. I missed some Big Bash games, which I was a little bit annoyed about, but obviously I had exams to kind of complete. But I guess I'm pretty keen to keep studying, so I'm wanting to go to uni this year and do as much of that as I can with my cricket as well. So I do like having something else on the side. I think cricket's a game that's pretty cool, and if you don't have something else, then you can kind of go mad a bit thinking too much about it.
Don't know what you're talking about.
No. That's actually the opposite of the view of most great cricketers who put career and family aside to only play fourth grade. I mean, you mentioned there about not playing, sort of missing a couple of games for exams. I mean, I understand that you missed schoolies last year. to playing the Big Bash, which would be a dream of any young cricketer across the country, male or female. I mean, how tough a sell was that for the, you know, for your friends missing out on drinking some UDLs on the Gold Coast to play, you know, against the Sydney Sixers, for instance?
Well, were you going to the Gold Coast, firstly?
Well, yeah. Or Byron.
It was Byron, yeah.
Okay.
No, I was devastated to be missing schoolies.
Yeah.
But like, I had the updates on the Snapchat stories from my mates, so yes, although I wasn't there, I definitely got the updates, which was nice. And I mean, I would prefer to be playing in the Big Bash League. Obviously, it's a pretty good opportunity.
Schoolies is once in your life, though, whereas Big Bash is every year, and it goes for ages. You should have gone to schoolies.
I know.
Actually, got a fine for trying to get an underage at Cheeky Monkeys during in Byron during schoolies. So, you know, it can turn out bad.
Yeah. Both had good experience on schoolies, what you're trying to say.
Exactly, yeah. I didn't have a Big Bash offer.
No.
So it was 2002. sorry, Annabelle. Let's talk a little bit about this World Cup coming up. You've come into the side. We've been joking a lot about, you know, how Australians are so keen to win anything as a general public, and we lump people with these professionals with these expectations that they must win all the time. You guys go into the tournament as favourites. Like, are you feeling pressure or scrutiny from the public and an expectation to win? And if so, how are you going about it? Like, does it weigh heavily on you, or are you guys just going out there aggressively to get that success?
I think we're just really looking forward to it. Like, it's a pretty cool opportunity to have a home World Cup. So we're all just, really excited. We obviously have a game tomorrow against South Africa as a warm-up game. So we're just all excited to get into it. Obviously, home World Cup comes with other pressures, but I guess it's just like any other World Cup. It's anyone's to win. So we're, looking out to come out aggressively and just play our game. And hopefully that means we can win a few games along the way.
And like, if I might ask, what about you and your attitude? I mean, people familiar with World Cups of any tournaments are familiar with the idea of a young person getting selected that might just be an add-on to the group for the experience, but another young person might be a pivotal part of the group. I mean, is your attitude to try and play every game and dominate, or have you been given an explanation as to your role in the group?
No, not really. I'm not really expecting anything. I think I'm hoping that I can just get ready to play, and if an opportunity comes that I can take it, but absolutely no expectation on I guess game time. But I'm just looking forward to being a part of it. Obviously, we've got a pretty talented lineup that have had a lot of success over the last few years, so I'm just trying to soak up being in the presence of some of the greats of the game, like Meg Lanning and obviously Elise Perry as well. So it's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, you say Elise Perry there, and I'm going to embarrass you here, because obviously you got huge raps on you, coming through, being into the national side in such a big competition at such a young age. But I'll give you some quotes here that you've almost definitely been read to before. But Elise Perry said on you, she's already filled a lot of that potential, and it's scary to think how much further she can go. She's a wonderful athlete. She's got a great build. She bowls fast and into the wicket and is able to swing it. She's a very, very classy batter, plays essentially around the whole ground already. To think that she's only had such a small amount of experience at this level, but she already looks capable and comfortable. Time is only going to make her better. I'm really pumped that she's getting the opportunity when she is, because I think she could be one of the best we've ever produced. That's from Elise Perry. Now, those are her public statements, but I want to know, is Elise talking to her training yet?
I sat next to her on the bus today for the first time, so
how was that?
That's good.
Yeah.
She's good. She's a legend, and obviously accomplished a fair bit, so that's some pretty nice words coming from her and what she's sort of done over the last 10 to 15 years.
Annabelle, I mean, we have to ask, because we always do when we're talking to anybody at that high level, but can you take us into the social dynamics of the women's team? I mean, when you're young and you're starting out, is it a case, I mean, just illuminate it for us. Is it a case of, you know, you have to sit in a certain position, or you have to do certain things to earn, your way up the team? Is there an alpha culture? Is there a pyramid, I guess, is what I'm asking? What do you have to do to be accepted?
Well, I'm lucky to have a few of the younger Victorians who I'm sort of mates with. So I've just been following them around, following their sort of footsteps and doing what I'm told, basically, to avoid getting into trouble. I did get into trouble today for sitting in the wrong spot on the bus, so
Okay, that doesn't change.
Interesting, yeah. Okay.
How does that play out? Like who calls you out on it?
She was sitting next to Elise Perry on the bus, but she wasn't supposed to be sitting there.
I see.
Yeah.
And Elise told you that?
Yeah.
Shooter loves to throw some banter around, so she's always...
She looks like
The alpha female, yeah, okay, I see.
Yeah,
I want to know, how much research have you guys done on the opposition, and what can you tell us specifically about Thailand? What are their strengths and weaknesses?
Great question.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know if I'd be able to tell you much.
Because it's secret,
pool,
obviously.
So
it's secret, yeah,
we actually
secret.
Don't play them. So.
Well, you might meet them later in the tournament.
Yeah, it could be semi-final.
Could be
a final, MCG.
Could be.
Cross that bridge when we come to it.
Annabelle, I mean, that's all there is from me. We thank you for enduring that. That's what we always say with these conversations. But we'll be watching, and a lot of people will be watching as well. We're looking forward to hopefully watching you in action. I think you're being a bit coy about your expectations of playing. I think you should be in the side there, and we hope you guys go all the way and can make good on probably too much expectation from the nation that it's literally the greatest ever event ever where Australia wins everything. But, you know, no pressure. All the best. I genuinely hope you enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
He goes, this is a guest that we have wanted on for a very long time. It's a total privilege to be sitting in this room with her. A room that we'll describe shortly, actually. But let me do this introduction. Belinda Clark became captain of the Australian team at 23, leading Australia in 11 tests and 101 one-day internationals. A win rate of over 80%, won 2 World Cups, the first player, male or female, to make a double century in a one-day international. She opened the batting and averages over 45 in both tests and ODI. She was named Cricketer of the Year in the inaugural edition of Wisden Australia, was made a member of the Order of Australia in 2000, inducted into the New South Wales ICC and Australian Cricket Halls of Fame. She has since held a range of leadership positions in the game. She was head of the National Cricket Centre. She had the Pat Howard job on an interim basis after Pat Howard and is now Executive General Manager Community Cricket at Cricket Australia. She has a science degree and has been a Harvard Doom Management... ... So, our privilege, as I said, to be joined by Belinda in CA Towers at Jollymont. Belinda, welcome to the Grey Cricketer podcast. No doubt the highlight of your public life so far.
I've been waiting for a long time for the invite, so it's fantastic. I finally got it.
And for a chance to speak just then. Well, first question, just being in CA Towers, you know, if these walls here could talk, what would they say?
Wow, that's an interesting question to start with. What would they say? They'd say this place has been on a journey from essentially connecting with both men's and women's game, and then obviously in the latter part of the decade, really going hard at making sure the game's accessible for everyone. So that's what these walls will tell you, that the game's open and ready for business. Mm.
Sam literally went through your entire LinkedIn then, so I won't go through, you know, but you've sort of lived your entire life in cricket, you know, captain of the country for 11 years, chief executive of Women's Cricket Australia, took Pat Howard's job for a little bit there, now doing this as well. I mean, like, your entire life has been cricket, and obviously our communication is through the grassroots and stuff, but you still stay very connected to the grassroots game. I mean, what is your relationship to club cricket?
Well, I've obviously experienced it as a player, playing both at sort of junior teams and then into premier cricket or grade cricket as it was when I was playing as well, and obviously through the ranks, but always been really interested in making sure that kids in particular have a chance to play, and a lot of my work has been either across community or high performance, and I find myself now back in community and watching nieces and nephews, and, you know, just watching the joy that kids have and when they get attached to this game is amazing, and I'll just love it. Mm.
Can you tell us, I mean, just paint a picture for us what life was like in grade cricket for you? You played at Balmain. We're obviously club mates. You'd remember me from Balmain, of course. Similar records.
both Captain Australia.
Ashes
win as well.
One was in his dreams. can you paint a picture for us from when you started grade cricket? What did grade cricket, women's grade cricket, look like when you started? And, you know, this is the Grade Cricketer podcast, so we're looking for, like, detail of, you know, on-field, off-field, social hierarchies, who's the alpha, who's the, you know, can you please couch it in these terms?
Yeah, sure. So when I was, when I first started playing cricket, I was playing in a junior boys team in Newcastle, And my brother was playing district cricket in Newcastle for Newcastle City. And the captain of the Newcastle City team was a guy called Tim Griffiths. And Tim Griffiths had a sister called Sally Griffiths. And Sally Griffiths played for Australia. So I turned up at training one day wanting to have a practice because I'd been picked in a rep team. And then the next year I was travelling to Sydney and I was playing for Gordon at that point, back and forth on a weekend, sort of get up at 8 o'clock, get in the car, drive to Sydney, play a game generally on the North Shore but all over Sydney. And then once I finished high school, I selected a subject that wasn't offered at Newcastle Uni, which meant I had to travel to Sydney. That was physiotherapy. I landed in Sydney, and that's when I started playing with what eventually became Balmain Cricket Club. So it was all about scrambling to get a team together, which I think a lot of cricket clubs still go through that, making sure you're putting in effort to make the junior team that you're working with, and that the club's got a pipeline of talent coming through. It was about a mixture of Australian players and people that wanted to turn up and have fun. Some kids were driving from Mudgee and Lisa Kightley. So it was just a real melting pot of just people that loved the game from all levels. And we all played Premier Cricket as much as we played for Australia. In fact, I would have played more club games than I did played for Australia on my state.
Mm. You hear that story a lot about girls, especially in your era as well, having to play with boys at the sort of early age as well. But that's slowly changing, isn't it? There's going to be more and more girls teams at the grassroots level around the country.
Yeah, so we've got a lot more girls teams playing now. And, some small country towns still only have the option of playing in boys comps. But most places now have got girls comps. It's sort of growing steadily. And we're absolutely thrilled that is the case. So that, you know, if you're really good and you want to test yourself with the boys, you can still do that. But to get the masses playing, you do need to provide them an option to play with their friends. And that's one of the things that attracts girls to the game.
We often ask this of, like, esteemed guests who come on who had careers where they were just absolute doyens. I mean, you've scored so many runs. For me growing up, it was just whenever I saw women's cricket scores, I expected Belinda Clark to have 100 next to her name or 200 or whatnot. I mean, I guess my question is, when did you realise you were just way better than everybody?
Well, I actually... you probably remember the days you didn't score runs, not necessarily the days you did. Yeah. I think that's common for all cricketers as well.
I don't know.
But I remember a homecoming having an international match played Australia-England, I think it was, at Newcastle Sports Ground, which is where I grew up, watching touring teams come through and play in the local town. And it was the home field for my brother's team. So I went back and they made a big fuss that I was coming home and I was playing my first game on Newcastle number one sports ground. I got a golden duck. So the next time I played there, I did actually play there again. I made sure I didn't do that again. But things like that happen. But you remember the times where you failed as opposed to the ones that you succeeded.
That's so disheartening to hear, like, all your successes in your life. Because I had the same. I remember all the failures, every drop catch, everything.
Really?
Can't remember a good day.
I was like, you've literally scored runs so many times that your main memories are when you didn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What about 97 World Cup? You're playing against the powerhouse of Denmark. You scored 229 not out. You surely must remember that day, and obviously how hard the wicket was because you bowled them out for 49. How hard was it?
It's a tricky day.
One. It's a bit two-paced.
So a couple of things that stuck in my mind. What is a two-paced wicket, by the way?
I'm not sure.
Someone said it the other day that the wicket's two-paced. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's called a change of pace. They're doing that deliberately.
That's right.
Two paces. Yeah. Let me set the scene. It was the smallest ground ever. It was the weak opposition. It was early on in a World Cup, and my objective was to bat the day. I hadn't had a good net session the day before, so my objective was to bat for 50 overs.
Now we're getting the
and crush. I scrambled through the first 10 or 15 and I started to get going and I came off and it was quite a kerfuffle at the end of the day with people realising what had happened and it's just... I'm not sure it was my best innings. It's the one that gets talked about.
It's like Bradman. Bradman said that. Bradman was like, my 300 wasn't the best. It was actually my 215.
Wisden said your 270 against England in the early 30s was your best ever.
Greatest ever innings.
Greatest ever innings in Test cricket. My 230 7 years later, batting at number 7 or whatever. Good with the stats there. In CA Towers. Let's talk about the Women's World Cup, right? So, I mean, you know, this is... I think our demographic of this podcast is shamefully about 95% blokes. But even we, I think, are getting message cut through that this is going to be an enormous event. We've definitely heard people saying that, should Australia make the final, you could be looking at the highest ever attended sporting event with women in the world ever.
Yep.
Right? With Katy Perry playing.
Yeah.
As a side note. You know, that must be enormously exciting, and obviously you guys have a whole bunch of activity around it. We're going to talk about one thing here that I think like we will get behind massively.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how excited is the organisation here ahead of that?
Yeah, organisation's excited, but from a personal perspective, I'm just absolutely rapt that we've put out a bold statement that we're going to fill an MCG, which is great. 90,186 bums we need on seats. but also we've got our opening game at the showgrounds, Australia-India, that'll be a ripper, and then two semi-finals at the SCG. So we're going to most places. Not every state's got matches, but most do, and it's just a great opportunity to come along, and we don't discriminate. So boys, men, they're all welcome. Mm. Buy a ticket and come along.
So I was saying, and this is what we're going to talk about. You guys have a program, and I should say, actually, he did not want to be mentioned, but there is a comms guy in the room, Luke. I'm just looking at him now, nodding his head as we're about to talk about this program, but his second 11 sub-districts for Elsternwick as well. There's a lot of sub-district energy in this room, just acknowledging it here, Luke. I told you I was going to do it. Yeah. Yeah. but you guys are running a program, the World Cup Clubs Ticketing Program, okay? Bit of a tongue twister, I'd say. However, what you guys are doing are, if clubs register for this program, which is open now, let me see if I get this right, you can register for this program, and if you sell tickets to the Women's World Cup, for every adult ticket you sell, you get $5 back. It's a wonderful fundraising opportunity. We get $5. If you sell a child's ticket, you get $1 for that. So if a club sells, for example, 1,000 tickets to the Women's World Cup, 1,000 adult tickets, they get $5,000.
Right.
So it's a great fundraising opportunity. Yeah. And same with the kids as well. Do we have the website for that?
We do. T20WorldCup.com/clubs. Make sure you go and register, because it's a great opportunity to not only buy a ticket for yourself, but encourage your teammates to come along, your teammates' family to come along, and then connect people. This game's got a great way of connecting people together, and this is just another way of doing that and picking up some funds along the way.
Mm. Look at our smooth foray into plugging stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say, like, are you guys confident? How confident are you of 90,000 people for that final? Because I mean, it's funny because like the way the men's calendar especially has been set up this year, like the national team sort of stopped playing here early January. Big Bash went on for a bit, but now there's still this hunger because most people who play cricket in Australia are still playing until March. There's still like a hunger there to see international competitive cricket. So you must be, I'd say, relatively confident if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm very confident, and obviously. Having the opportunity to have such a big stadium here and make a bold statement, and that was part of the reason that we went down this path was to really throw the lure way out there and say let's go get it. So look, I'm reasonably confident, particularly in this city. Melburnians are really love their sport, and we think we're going to put on a great show for them. So fingers crossed the Aussie team does well, but regardless, it's going to be a great celebration of, women and girls on the 8th of March.
Mm. I was going to say, just in the briefing for this, I saw that, like, one of the upsides of running this program is that, like, cricket clubs are remaining open, right? So you can register not only, like, for these tickets, but it reminds people that you can register to play while the tournament's on next year and, you know, in a time when normally cricket clubs will have finished by now and have closed. And, you know, as we sit here at CA Towers with the MCG overlooking us and everyone here bows down to AFL, clearly this is you guys just wanting to take on AFL now and win the month of March.
Why not? Yeah. Why not? If it's there to be
they
won.
They want every other month. So.
Yeah, well, they've forgotten when footy season is. So footy season starts after Easter in April, unless it's AFLW, which is sort of sneaking into the cricket season. Look, we're just absolutely rapt that we've got such a big world event. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for dads to grab their daughters. It's, mum and dad. It's about mates coming along. It's just going to be a great celebration of cricket. We think it's going to be big.
Yeah, you say that about the sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You obviously captained Australia for 11 years. I mean, this is Meg Lanning's team now. It's a great team, just like you had many great teams as well when you were playing. I mean, what's Meg Lanning on the precipice of here in terms of the achievement, a home final, 90,000 people, all this stuff? This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, right, for her?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the players.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if I'm just keep trying to put myself back in those sort of playing shoes and think,
Do you want to be selected?
Yeah, I'm ready.
How would you go?
I've had a few years in a good paddock, but after that I'm ready. But, you think, wow, what sort of pressure are they going to have to deal with?
Yeah, cool.
To make their way through the tournament and get themselves into a semi-final. They lost a semi-final of the World Cup in England against India. They didn't make the final. They had to sit and watch it, and they've been a different team ever since. So I think that she in particular, she will not want to let this chance go by, and she's got to keep the whole team calm while she delivers herself. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they handle the pressure.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's one of the like kind of paradoxical selling points of this as well, because if you can get a whole bunch of people around Australia to say, oh, is there another tournament we can win and feel the reflected glory of it and then boost our own national self-esteem superficially, then people will get on board for that. But at the same time, that puts a lot of pressure on the team to deliver as well. It's like you not only have to win this as favourites, but you carry the nation's expectations as well as CA's need for there to be 90,000 people at the MCG.
Well, especially if like Collingwood have a slow start.
Well, that's
right.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about that, Belinda. Just take it as a comment. You said, I believe you are going to join us for Ask TGC, which would be, well, it'd be the first time we've had a woman join us for Ask TGC, which is neither here nor there, but we wanted to get you along particularly because you are the Executive General Manager of Community Cricket. And these are your constituents who are asking questions, very important questions about their relationship to the game, other relationships to the game, etc. So we'd love your views on some of these questions. Do you have the first one there?
Oh, I'll go with the first one,
mate. To kick off with, he goes, and apologies in advance.
Yeah, worryingly, as an omen, this one's from Anonymous, so they didn't want to attach their name to it. Dear hashtag RTDC/DreamAnalyzers, from a low point last year where I was fighting against a serious cricketing relapse revealed in your podcast about 7 months ago, I felt I had made a strong recovery and returned to an even keel in recent months. After live streaming the World Cup final on my tablet in the maternity ward with my wife and one-day-old child next to me, I managed to start the road to recovery by cancelling my Sky Sports cricket subscription after watching the Ashes, then following up by unsubscribing from all cricket-related Instagram and podcast feeds except yours. Good. And proceeded to throw myself into first-time fatherhood. Everything's going well so far.
So far, so good.
Things seem to be going well. This was until I had this dream last night. This was, no doubt, brought on by recently finding some old pictures from my first season in England over 20 years ago. The dream started innocently enough, a nostalgic view of some good performances with the bat in past matches, the sound of leather on willow, and the sight of the ball clearing the rope at my old club in Kent. But then it changed and I found myself as part of the club's setup, walking between the two ovals, talking to the players, none of whom I recognise, checking the state of the covers, etc., as if play was about to start and I was helping get things ready. Then it struck me, why wasn't I playing? So I immediately thought of emailing the club captain to inform him I was available and also strangely requesting a clean slate from any previous indiscretions at the club, which might be tarnishing my good record, though I could not think of one, even once awake. Having put my hand up for selection, my thoughts now turned to preparing to play.
Detailed dream.
Thoughts of using Google Maps to alter my commute via the oval nets, imagining calling to organise a net session once a week and trying to estimate the timing and cost of all this raced through my mind. Remember, this is all still a dream. Then my cricket antibodies started to kick in, questioning everything as I was planning. You're too old. You'll never get in shape in time. It'll cost a fortune to hire a net, bowling machine and coach. You have a 90-minute commute home. How can you fit a net session into that and get home to help with the baby? Why would you be able to? Would you be able to afford a new kit? You only have a family car now. Are you going to take your wife and child with you to every match? What would they do on Saturdays? This is the most detailed dream I've ever thought.
Don't they just go for 3 second streams? Anyway, yeah.
At this point, the turmoil-induced adrenaline woke me up with a start. It was 4:30 a.m. and I couldn't get back to sleep. The confusion as to why there is this continued torture about wanting to return to the game kept me awake until it was time to get up to go to work. I'm now writing this on the tube on the way in. How can I resolve this inner conflict of wanting to play again against the reality of being middle-aged with my best cricketing performances well and truly in the past? Help me, TGC. You're my only hope. Regards, Anonymous.
Okay. I wonder why Anonymous. I mean, that...
There was nothing, really offensive about that.
Clearly embarrassed by that. Well, I mean, I guess the first thing I would say is cricketing dreams has been a consistent theme on the Grad Cricketer.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's just not being able to get your pads on or run or getting timed out.
Yes.
This is very detailed. This is walking around the ground. This is being an administrator of sorts and then thinking about playing,
etc. Yeah, so his return to cricket is as an administrator,
and
a scorer.
Slash player, it's more of a kind of... pastoral role in the game, which is very... Now I see why he wanted to be anonymous. Belinda, perhaps you could enlighten us on whether you've ever, after a stellar career, wanted to pull the pads on again, or whether you even have... Do you have cricket dreams at all?
I haven't had one for a while. I have had that one where you're not quite ready to go in and to bat, and it's time to go in and bat.
But, is it pads? Can't get the pads
on? Is it pads or gloves?
Yeah, the whole thing, like you forget your gloves, you've left something at home, like just the whole thing.
I get run out in my dreams. I can't run. I can't complete a run.
Right. Jackson Bird had salad sandwiches in his gloves. He put a hand in his gloves and it was just salad sandwiches. Why are they salad sandwiches?
Definitely salad?
Yeah, he said he was specific. Salad. It was salad sandwiches.
Right. He's in Australia then.
Yeah.
Different sandwich in England. Look, I think this person's just dealing with the, you know, it's like the moth becoming a butterfly of being selfish as a player and now is trying to come back as a volunteer and a helper and helping other people.
Okay.
And they're struggling with that because they actually want to go back and be the selfish player, and they've got a child as well. So I think it's all tangled up. It's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
As the AGM of community cricket in this nation, would you encourage Anonymous to actually take up a volunteer role?
Yeah, start with live scoring. Start with going down to your junior club, opening up the iPad and contributing to the joy that kids have when they play this great sport.
And
start simple.
Yeah. You just joined Fatherhood as well, so there you go.
Sign
Anonymous.
Up your kid for Woolworths Cricket Blast. There you go. Yeah. There's another tip.
more messaging. That's good.
Okay.
What I find about this is like none of those people know that Blindell Clark was going to be answering these questions.
Exactly.
Which is, I thought two idiots from the internet were going to be. Yeah.
Tim Young writes in, full name, sounds real. Dear TJC, a former teammate has been spending a winter playing subbies in Melbourne, earning minimal. He has just sent this text. Inverted commas here. Lads, had a tricky few days, currently in a detention centre in Melbourne. Get deported tomorrow on a 3:35 flight to Gatwick, not complying with the terms of my visa. Didn't want you to hear it from anyone else, but I hope I see you all soon. In text. Is this A, the ultimate alpha move from an Australian government who really have their eye on the ball at the moment and so should be praised for their vigilance? B, a clever ploy to distract from said player's decision to pack the game in at the age of 26 after a failed attempt at a first-class career? C, a deep fake to allow him to continue to live in Australia, keeping his English friends none the wiser as he spies for the Chinese government? It's one of those three things,
it's
obviously.
It's definitely not A. It's not the government.
Belinda's head is in her hands at the moment.
Yeah. See, the
rubbing
first
her
one,
eyes
the
going,
first one was
why
like
am
a
I
nice
here?
Kind of dream story volunteer stuff. And the second one's like, I'm in a detention centre in Melbourne.
Am I a Chinese government spy? Yeah.
It's more likely for mine. Well, it's probably B, a clever ploy to distract from said player's decision to pack the game in at 26. Yeah. And he doesn't want to face his friends. Either that or a Chinese spy.
Mm. So probably a Chinese spy. Australian government for deportation, etc.
No, that was A. It's not that one. It's not the government one.
Oh, pardon me.
Yes. Yeah, it's a clever ploy to distract. So I don't think he has been deported. I think he's in the country. Yeah. He's still residing in Melbourne somewhere.
So he's not in a detention centre. It's just an extremely elaborate
lie. If he's
lie.
In a detention centre, why is he texting?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah.
Because do you know that they take away your phones?
When I was there, what happened to me was...
Belinda, I mean, what's your instinct here? You'd come across stuff like this all the time.
I mean, there's obviously a very clear process to follow when you want a sports visa to play cricket in this country. And it's inside my department that actually sorts this out. So if he's rubbished the rules, I'd be most upset. But I would say have a good hard look at yourself because you're ruining it for everyone else.
Oh, my God. Brilliant. Maddie B. Dear TGC, love the podcast. Here goes. I'm a batsman from England who decided to come to Australia for 6 months to play cricket on the back of three consecutive seasons where I averaged 25 with the bat. Since arriving, I've scored less than 100 runs and an average of 12. In the past week alone, I was given out first ball of the game in a two-day. I caught at short leg off my thigh pad in a decision so rough that the bowler hung his head in shame with a look of horror and slight bemusement as he accepted the high fives and bum slaps from his teammates. I've since been champed by the staff working at a Santa on the beach Christmas photo. Given that I have a degree in mathematics from a top 10 British university, is it time to move on from this childish pastime and accept that my place is in fact inner city financial district rather than attempting to replicate Alistair Cook and fulfil my goal of making first grade runs away from home? If I continue to pursue this and somehow succeed, would that make me a more complete player than Warner? Should I pack it up and just go home? Cheers, boys. #RTGC.
All right, so... this is a particular style of question we often get, Belinda, where it appears on the surface to be self-deprecating. Mm. Should I give it up? But he manages to sneak in a number of comments about himself. Yeah. It is a man, of course, of wanting to score first grade runs, i.e. I've played first grade in Australia, that I have a maths degree from a top 10 British university. Yeah, top 10. Who talks like
Who's
that?
Who's ranking?
Who says top 10 British university?
It must be like ninth then.
Exactly.
Because if it was fourth, he'd say top five.
I know this sort of guy. Calls himself Matty B. Sorry, we disparage these people.
Thanks for writing it, Matthew.
Yeah, thanks anyway. And yeah, also I averaged 25 of the batters. I mean, that's not a good average. I don't know. Isn't
the answer though, like, get your runs at home. Like, runs away from home don't count.
Yeah. And it's probably Steve about Smith right that like, you average double in England than you do in Australia in terms of club cricket standard.
Yeah.
That'd be about right.
Yep.
Yeah. Belinda, you...
Well, you scored 229 like not out away from home. That was in India.
Sounds like a normal season, doesn't it? Like you're hot 1 minute. Well, I wouldn't say averaging 25 is actually good to start with, would you?
No.
Like,
no.
That's
for normal people, it is.
See, I'd kill 25. What did you average? What was your test average?
45.
Do you know what I've...
Oh, yeah, what is it?
Decimal place, yeah.
No, I don't know it to the decimal second place.
Do you want to guess it?
Yeah.
45.82.
Please be right. Please be right.
Oh, come on.
45.82. It's like the Price is Right.
In fact, can we say 46 from then on if it is true, if it's over 0.5? You round up.
So what's... You see that on your messages. Yeah. So you said your test average was 45.82?
Yeah. What is it?
45.95.
Oh, okay. That's close.
I've missed. I've undershot.
That's close.
ODIs? Do you want to guess?
It's 45 again, isn't it? Point something.
Yeah.
47.49.
Okay. There you go.
Couple of not outs in there.
You go. A bit impatient in the test game. So what should he do? I think
he's done what he wanted to do, which was have his story told to 30,000 people.
Yeah, I think
about being good at maths.
Maths. Go back to maths.
Go back to maths. Yeah.
Yeah.
Inner city. Yeah.
Financial district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leave it.
Got
there.
Nothing for you. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's all right.
Okay. I'm conscious of your time here, Belinda. We just got one for Philippa. Hey guys. Okay. One of the promising young players at our club began the season referring to himself as Smudge. What the F? We don't swear in this class. Purchasing all new Balance gear and taking on certain characteristics of one SPD Smith, Peter Devereux Smith. We are now 12 rounds into the season and he has 150 runs in total, has been dropped down two grades and kicked from the first grade WhatsApp group. Is this an appropriate punishment for committing utter blasphemy? That is referring to Steve Smith. Thanks. Just says thanks.
His biggest punishment there has been kicked out of a WhatsApp group. That's really ostracising, and rightfully so. Because if he went with Smudge, but he had, like, let's say, Kookaburra kit, then it'd be a bit of a joke. But the fact that he's committed to full New Balance kit and he's calling himself Smudge, probably doing some weird leaves as well. Like, he's really... What's this guy's name? Doesn't say.
It doesn't say, but... I don't. Maybe he's just doing a bit. I mean, maybe he's not that good at cricket, but he goes, look, I'm just going to be Smudge. Everyone in a cricket team needs an identity, don't they, Belinda? Like, you know, if you're not the top run scorer or whatever, you have to be the funny person, or you have to have a story in the stretching circle, or you have to be good on the circuit or something, and this guy has got no cricket.
See, if, like, Marnus was, like, started calling himself Smudge and, like, next season comes back a New Balance kit, then I'd be like, I'm okay with that.
That's fine.
He scored 1,200 test runs last year.
Doesn't it just go to show, Belinda, really, that, like, it doesn't matter who you are. This is sadly, it doesn't matter who you are or what you're about. If you score runs, you'll be respected. And if you don't, you're going to be kicked out of your WhatsApp group. I mean, is that the message you want to send as an AGM of community cricket?
No, I think he needs to get put back in that WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
Give him another chance.
Put him back.
Put him back in. He's trying hard. He's done the hard yards. If he's doing all the mannerisms, I mean, we all learn by imitating.
True.
I think if he's got all that down pat, I'd give him another go.
Do you think it's a case of also maybe the encouragement to the guy as well who's imitating Smudge is just be yourself, you know, just play the way that you want to play? Or is it actually quite good to just pretend to be Steve Smith?
It's just one of those tricky ones, isn't it? I think I don't think the Steve Smith thing's working for him if he's not scoring runs. That's ultimately the test, isn't it? So it maybe he needs either pick someone else or try himself.
Bradman. He's going to come back. Has his WhatsApp name, Sir Don.
Interesting pad.
Bradman backed away.
Interesting outfit. They've got the full flannels.
Yeah, buckle pads.
Button-up shirt.
Button-up shirt, nice Van Heusen number. Yeah.
We've stolen more of your time than we said we would, Belinda, but we very much appreciate you coming on and dealing with these questions. I mean, what's your view of the state of grassroots cricket off the back of these questions now?
It sounds like it's healthy. A little bit of confusion in the minds of these young guys mainly. Yeah. But, you know, be yourself, keep playing the game and connect with your teammates. Oh,
that's really nice. That's really lovely. Nice. Yeah. I don't trust it, but yeah.
Thanks, Belinda.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.